heard when I was a kid. You know, they didn't know how to catch those big halibuts. See, the only way they get, when they come to solid water, they spear them. You know, they had a lot of spears and arrows, you know, those days. And this guy was thinking about it. That's the story I was told when I was a boy. And wonder how he's going to make a hook to catch those nice big halibuts, see? And he was thinking about it all the time, and he went to sleep. And here he dream about it, how to fix this hook, make it like this, you know, and they put a nail on it. Well, that time they put a bone. They take a deer bone, there's a little bone right on the leg, they take it off and it's pointed. They break it off and then sharp it some way. They make it like this, see? And they put it in the water, they wash it. They put a lid on the some kind of rock. They use rock those days. And have it down, and they tie this so far up off the ground, see? It floats up, this floats. And when the halibut sees that, they come and go close to it. And they make a suction. They don't go right after it. It makes a suction, they watch it. The boys watch it. Make a suction and this shoots right inside the mouth. See, this side, this way. And it gets in there, you can't pull it out. You have to cut it out. Fasten it so tight you can't even bust it unless you break this, then it'll come out. They used to cut it out. I've fished with it many, many times. And you have to cut it out. That's the way they know how to, the hiders know how to make these, see? That's halibut hooks.
That's
hider's story.
George, why did they start carving them or decorating them? They could have just used plain wood.
Well, they just, you know, they do a lot of carving, so they have to carve it a little bit, you know? And they make a raven or some kind of design. And so they're tough when they bait this thing before they send it down. They talk to it, you know. They talk to the halibut. Go ahead and get that big halibut there. Just like it was alive, they talked. That's the way the hiders did it. They talk to the hook, you know, when they're sending it down.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a friend down there helping you get fish.
Yeah.
So that's why they made it in the form of an animal. Is it always a raven, or can it be another animal?
Yeah, they've carved something on it, you know. So,
how many designs do you use on the hook?
Well, I got a one whale killer here. Fellow, I make whale killer kind too. Fellow ordered, when they ordered, it's kind of slow to make whale killer. You have to bore a hole in it. The nurse from Kitchkan, I think, put her name on. Here's a whale killer one, see?
Oh, yes.
Here's the fin on, the teeth on, mm-hmm. Here's with the blowhole,
mm-hmm.
And here's the flipper on the side.
You have to put this piece in?
That's a piece in there.
Mm-hmm. Do you paint the halibut hooks?
I don't. You don't
even
put
natural.
Nothing. Just natural.
Just natural.
They never did varnish or paint it.
But can you tell me why the cord is?
Well, this is we call that cotton. This is cotton twine, you see, and you wrap it just in case you need it. Wrap it tight so it don't come apart. See, after it gets in the water, it'll be a little tighter. You know, I made my grandson, two grandsons, one the Demet, Margaret Demet boy, and the Hamilton one, my grandson. I made four like this. I went up the bay here and got three big halibut on it 2 months ago. They were really surprised, you know. Big ones on it. One weight, 106 pounder, you know. We caught three big halibut on it.
So you still, these are really used.
They sure can use them if you want to. Yeah.
Do you sell them anywhere through?
Huh?
Do you sell them in shops or give them as gifts?
See, a lot of people buy it there. I got orders and orders all the time. Yeah, mm-hmm. Make lots.
Do you change these designs here?
No, I don't paint. I just carve them in, see?
Mm-hmm. It's
supposed to be the wing here, right here, and the tail here, see? And the little knob on the raven, little knob here, see? Mm-hmm. So I put that little knob there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, do you want to keep working on it then?
Mm-hmm.
Just go ahead then and keep working on the one you're working on.
He's one of his uncles, I guess. I don't know how they were related, but they're related some way. I got the story on that one. He had a big cut on his mouth, see, big scar right here.
Yeah.
And he died, you know. And late years, I know him well, one of our uncles, Paul Gunnier. And he died, he was born with a big scar right here. Big scar, same place.
A hair lip type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big scar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they believe in it, the highest believe in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Mrs. Paul Lingling?
Yeah.
She married to Ivor Isaacson now. Mm-hmm. And her auntie, their aunties were all big, you know. Big humans, you know, real big, weight 250 pounds, round over, something like that. And my wife, before I married her, she was married with a young woman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this Ivor's wife's mother was, later on I got married to her.
Mm-hmm.
And they were telling the story that I'm going to come to you, born again, and I'll be a little woman, light woman. And it happened that way, they said, you know. Some way they recognized her, the same woman, you know. And she's still alive.
Yeah. And her manner was still the same as that other person.
Yeah.
The way she acted.
Yeah, that's the way Haidas believe it. They believe they come back again, you know?
So, uh-huh. Yeah. You know, George, we believe it too, in that my mother was an educated woman. She went down to Oregon, got her high school diploma and some college
uh-huh.
education.
Uh-huh.
And she came back up here for the first time and didn't know that she was so light, you know, fair. She didn't know she was Indian.
I know.
Until she saw her mother, and her mother says, "Ah, sick, eh?" She says,
yeah.
And this, my mother pulled her head back, "Who is this Indian woman?" And the man said, "It's your mother." And she says, "No." And then within a week, the love was so great that she didn't want to leave her mother again.
Mm-hmm.
See, and then my father got married to her in about 1902. Remember Winifred?
I know.
That burned here. At
yeah,
the,
I know the girls. Yeah, I do.
And she was born 1904. And then my Marion was born about 1906 in December.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was, before I was born, my mother was in a family way, pregnant. And then, you remember Dr. Archie?
I know Dr. I see him performing over
Dr.
a sick,
Paul.
Yeah, over a sick person in Slovakia when I was about 7 years old. I got so scared I run like everything out the house, you know, made so much performance.
Well, he used to.
Yeah, he had two rattlers, you know. He had two rattlers.
Anyway, he went to my mother and she says, Panik. He says, that's her mother, my mother's name. You are with child. And that child that you have is a boy. Not very long from now, I'm going to die. There was no sign of illness or anything like this. And then he says, and shortly after I die, I am going to come back to you. And his name will be Dr. Archie, just like mine. Shadaka in Sikkit. And so then when my mother was about ready to have me, they started to wrangle, and I was born on a boat. And just like he said, I wasn't going to be born in the house the same way as other children. I was going to be born different. Yeah, I was born on a boat. You know, that's uncommon in those days. So right away they said, my aunt's still living, Mrs. George Demert. She says, Dr. Archie Awa, Shataka Awa. And they said, my mother and father tried to name me William, but the public wouldn't accept it. Under public pressure, they named me Archie. So, ever since I was a little kid, even you called me Dr. Archie when I grew up till I was about 15 years old.
Yeah.
You kept talking, calling me that.
That's right.
So, the story goes, I was reincarnated. And I believe it.
Archie, I wonder if you could start now asking George some questions about the year he was born, about the village that he, was it
Halkan.
And how he came to Craig, and his children, his marriages, his life story.
No.
We may have to stop for tape change, and we'll let
I will let him talk to me because I know the questions he might ask. Well, George, tell me, I saw your picture there a while ago as a little boy. Now, tell me when you were born and where you grew up, and you got some education. Well, maybe a little, but tell me about that.
You know, Mother told me I was born in Halkan, you know?
Uh-huh.
And in 1882 I was born in Halkan. We lived there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then after I was born, she married. My father died. He went down to Seattle, and my father died in Seattle. So when I got a little big and he married to a man from Tungquan, see?
Mm-hmm.
The Catlan, next town, in a little village. Next town, they called Tlunkwan. And we moved over there, you know. And we stayed there for a while, and I think I was about 6 years old when we moved to Halkan again, see where I was born. And we lived there a while, and here the missionary lady, her name was Mrs. McLeod. She come to Halkan when she's 17 years old with a brother, old man Lewis Gould. His name was Gould. They come to, I don't know what year they come there. But she wanted to adopt me, and the worst way, you know. And mother had about four that time when I was seven years old. And so she did adopt me. I stayed with her, a missionary woman, you know. So I grew up with the white people, right there in Halkan. They had a home for the girls and boys there, big buildings there, where they teach the boys and girls, you know. So I grew up in Halkan. And then when I was about 27 years old, I got married and come up here to start a cannery here in 1912.
Yeah, 1912.
Yeah, 1912.
Was it a cannery?
Cannery. Well, they built a cool storage first. I worked for Craig Muller, you know, before I was married, you know. I worked for Craig Muller in 1908, you know. I worked for him. I used to buy king salmon for him in a canoe. Row up here, big bay, they call it Big Harbor. We used to row up there twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
First time they ever trolled for king salmon I know of was 1908. Yeah. Then they started mild cured, yeah.
You lived here
I live
in
here.
The winter time too?
No, I didn't live here. We go home when in the fall of the year we go home. Then I come here in 1912 to live here.
That's when you brought the wife.
That's
Don's mother.
Don's mother and
Freddie,
yeah, my first wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we live here then, long time.
This is where you built the house, but mm-hmm.
We had a house over here, a little ways from here, and then when they wanted to sell this house to me, I bought from George Haldane this house, you know, George Haldane.
Now, you said George Haldane, how many of you came together finally?
There's George Adamson and his family, and Eddie Kogo and his family, and our family come here at that time,
Hidenso. Hidenso. And George Haldane.
He came way later. But Eddie Kogan and his family was, at the time I come up here, they were here.
And then you tried to form a little meeting, didn't you?
Yeah, we.
To,
they started a little school among themselves, you know, to get the kids to go to school, so they built a little schoolhouse here, you know. The people in Craig built a little schoolhouse here, and so they started school here.
Archie, at one time, wasn't it true that Clinkets couldn't go to white men's schools unless they renounced being Indian or something?
No, that wasn't true. It was against the law, state law, for Indians to go to a public school. Craig was the only place where the Indians and white students went to school because of him. The natives, the Indians and the whites built that school over
we
here.
We built a first school here.
And they got the territorial money to finance it, and that's the reason why the Indians went to school here, in territorial school. And they didn't question it, but the Indians were not allowed in any other public schools in the state.
That's right.
The only place they could was in BIA schools or for higher education. The name of this place, first time.
His Tlingit name, Shansi, a Tlingit name.
Shansi. All right. And then you met with Craig Muller and George Edenso and yourself and maybe Eddie Kogo.
Eddie Kogo and then.
And then you wanted to decide what to name it.
Well,
did they try to say Hamilton?
No, they didn't. They didn't say that, but they gave the name because Craig Muller started the Molecule Station here, so they gave the name, his name here,
name.
Craig, yeah. Yeah, Craig, they would call it Craig,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
because he started the business here.
Here.
That's right, now, let me see, let me go back to the one. At that time, or you can tell it, they followed you here.
Yeah, they would come a little later, you know. These gardeners and Young's family and the Spath family, they come a little later. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They came from Haokan.
Haokan, they lived in Haokan, yeah.
In the Navy camp.
Yeah, from Haokan village.
Mm. About the time Craig began to be a little settlement here, when did they move Heidelberg to, when did they move Klinkquan, Haokan, and Sukwan to Heidelberg?
Yeah, they moved 1911, started, yeah.
Okay, they moved it to 1911. That's when Craig was pretty well established,
yeah.
In 1912.
Yeah, quite a few fishermen's were here then.
Mm-hmm. And now, how many changes have you seen here?
Oh, yes, the United States bought Alaska from the Russia in 1867.
Were there more fish then than now?
Oh, talk about fish. You know, they can't, when I was a small boy in Kluwak, when they start that cannery, they can nothing but red salmon. Nothing but red salmon. They make a pack out of red salmon. There's so many streams, red salmon, like Hedda and Wamchuk and Deweyville and Kluwak. They can nothing but sockeye when they're small.
There were so many fish.
So much they fish, they wouldn't care other fish. No humpies, no dogs.
What do you think has made the fish go away?
Well, I blame the traps. My blame is the traps. The fish, night and day, fishermen fish daytime, they go to sleep for 4 or 5 hours, and the fish will go through while the fishermen are asleep. But the trap fish night and day, the trap never went to sleep. 6 days a week. And I heard there's a lot of trap watchmen who's paid by the canny man, let it fish night time, Sunday night, night time, on Sunday, you see, fish night time, and close it off daytime.
Before,
I heard that.
Before the game commissioner came around.
Yeah, before.
Over here, can you point out where they had some traps here in Big Harbor?
Yeah, they had the one across here, right across, right across.
And then they had one over here.
Yeah.
And one right here, isn't it?
No, not, I know. Up here, by this little, on the other side, the Crab Bay, there's one, uh-huh. One floating trap.
But I don't know what one looks like.
I'll draw it for you. But there was one off that point, that island, the graveyard island.
I don't remember.
There was one off that point.
Uh-huh.
And there were standing traps then, not floating.
There was standing trap right over
there. Right here, and one over there, and one here. Do you remember when Big Harbor used to be alive with young cohos, young sink kings about that big?
Well, I don't remember. I know there used to be a lot of fish up there.
And you couldn't fish?
A lot of fish.
Oh, okay. And during the lifetime of the trap wiped out Big Harbor.
Sure, they killed everything off.
There were many traps along the way.
All over.
It was, when did the trap start, I wonder? About 1912?
Something like that. Yeah.
And then they outlawed it after it became a statehood.
Yeah, that's right.
And now today we have other problems, don't we, from fishing?
Yeah.
Was it foreign fishing?
Well, I guess Japs. They blame Japs and Russia kill our fish off.
And
so
Koreans.
Yeah, Koreans.
And. Okay, now, the changes that you see in the corporation, is it?
Yes, I can't answer that one. I don't know much about it.
Nobody does.
That's out of my area. My reach. Okay.
Who was your first child?
My first child?
Uh-huh.
Willis Hamilton.
Willis?
Yeah.
And And how many children did you have?
I had nine with my first wife.
Nine with your first wife?
Yeah.
And one girl with the last one. Eight boys.
There she is standing there, the last one right there. They call her Curly. One little girl says...
Clara.
Clara's first.
You have eight boys and one girl.
Three girls from the first.
Six
boys and three girls from the first.
First wife, yes. Uh-huh. And as I remember, your wife was very beautiful.
Yes, wonderful woman. She never drank, she never smoked, like I did. I picked up a nice girl, you know.
Uh-huh. You were very fortunate. She was a good mother to those kids. Where did they first get their education?
Well, she didn't go to school much, you know. She was small, you know. The parents always go out camping, you know, so mm-hmm. she didn't have much time to go to school in Hawken, you know. That's what happened. Mm-hmm. She didn't get much education. Mm-hmm. Read a little bit, but not much.
But Don got his education here after he came back.
Then Don went to University of Seattle.
University of Washington.
Washington, yeah.
In Seattle. He went two and a half years.
I think he went clear through.
Clear through.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Don went clear through. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the mm-hmm. first from, first, hired from Craig to get his degree.
Mm-hmm.
Don.
He was an architect. He got the second place down there. That's something when he gets second place architect. Oh, you ought to see his work. Or something.
Why is it that so many Klingit children do go on and get degrees today?
And
do go to college.
Haida.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went fishing instead of a follow that, you know.
And became a very professional fisherman.
Yeah.
And he figured out that you can't make a good living just fishing a few weeks in the summertime. So he planned out fishing.
Halibut, he used to fish halibut too.
And crabbing. He fished about nine months out of the year. So therefore he became very successful. Isn't that right?
That's right. Fish, okay. King crab, halibut, salmon.
Willis. Went into working at Ketchikan. He moved to Ketchikan.
Yeah, I moved to Ketchikan from here.
And then he worked in the
New England
Fish Company for years. Did he fish?
Huh?
For a while, or with you?
He fished a little while with me when he was a young kid.
Mm-hmm. And who trained your boys to fish? It was you.
He says, Daddy did. I learned. Georgie, my youngest boy, he always do real good every summer. Mm. And they asked him where you learned it from. My daddy, he says.
On what boat?
Commodore. There's the boat right up there.
I'm asking you because I want to put it on the record. The Commodore. Commodore was a famous boat.
Yeah, one of the first.
Yeah, I've got a movie. There it is there. And there were six little boys on there, as I remember.
Yeah.
You remember the time you fished down at Talbot Nose?
Yeah.
Is it Talbot Nose?
Talbot Nose.
You fished down there and I saw you and here was
Josie
was that big, yeah, and Freddie was about that big, and Willis was of course bigger.
Yeah.
And they fished like troopers.
Yeah.
And you were directing them.
Right. Sure to that girl.
You raised your children.
Sure.
You weren't married for a long time. You raised your own children.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Sure.
And you trained your boys on the boat.
Teach them how to work.
And result that all but Willis became expert fishermen, highliners.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And Freddie, of course, didn't follow the fishing.
He went to work for Alaska Airlines over here.
For almost 20 years.
Long time, one place, huh?
For almost 20 years.
Long time, one place, huh?
Do you think the young people know about working today? Do they work as hard as young men in your time?
No. No, that life is too easy for them. Everything, you know. No, they don't care to work.
Do you think it was better before when men?
Well, you know, you learn everything what to do. You know, olden time they teach you how to do things. You know, but now they don't. You can, I can. When I was a kid, I even go out trapping. You know, go out trapping, hunting, teach you how to hunt, teach you. They used to take the big musket loaders, you know, put a little powder in, they got measurement. They show us how to load that, they load it from the muscle. You know, pour it down, powder first, then water on top, and shove it down, then the bullet in there, another water on top. Then you put the cap on, you're ready to shoot. They used to teach me how to shoot that. Even now, 7 years old, they teach me how to shoot. Teach you how to do everything from my time, you know.
How old were you when you started carving?
In how can one time, already?
Right.
In how can one time, they, when they finish the totem pole, they pull it up by hand, about 50 feet long, you know, it's a big long thing. And everybody helped, the women too, all the men, they take sticks and they make something cross like that to put underneath as it comes up. Little at a time, they protect from falling down. They make cross like that, they stick it under. Then line on top, all the ladies pull on the line. When they get it up, they fill the dirt right in there. And when it's finished, this old man that hired the people, carved the totem, get large blankets, he tears some in two. The best carver, he gets whole blanket. And they take gingham and that. They make dresses out, gingham we call it. Is that right?
Gingham.
Yeah.
And about 2 feet and a half long. And they tear that up enough for dress. Each lady, they give it all the ladies. That's where they did.
Did
then
you see these potlatches? I saw that
when I was a boy, yeah. And how can it happen?
What did these women do? They're 2.5 feet of gingham and wasn't big enough for one woman.
Well,
what
they're big enough, 2 yards.
2 yards.
They make a dress out of it,
and,
I guess. Apron.
In some places, didn't they trade? Women trade?
Well, sometimes, yeah. If one, yeah, that's what they do. Sometimes they trade to get one color, the
one color.
Color
together. They trade it.
Yeah.
So they, this was done discreetly though.
So,
do you have the potlatch hats in this area?
Only certain persons can wear it.
I'd like to hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could everybody wear that potlatch hat?
Not everybody.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody.
Sure.
Only
can you tell me about
only the
hats?
Important person. And the
well, they had hats, but you know, I don't know, I got a hat around here, maybe not.
From the family, you might have a hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the chief didn't earn all of his things. It was all his tribesmen and women that brought things together to help the chief, didn't they?
His nephew,
his nephew.
They helped him in his tribe, too.
In his tribe. It had to be his tribe.
Yeah,
no. They did this so that he wouldn't be embarrassed. Wouldn't, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That he would pay, and that they didn't want their uncle to be embarrassed. So they give everything to him to pay for this. And the more he paid, the greater honor was bestowed upon him. And later, he passes the honor to one of his nephews.
That's right.
When you were a child, George, did you look forward to potlatches?
I never thought of it, you know. It was so small. When you're a small boy, you never think of those things, you know. But I watched them. You know, the old man gave everything away, what he had, and he had nothing left, just his canoe and gun, his wife, that's all. Then he has to start over again
and then
to make a living.
They talk about his nephew. Was it his brother's boys, sons,
his,
or His sister's sons.
Well, his sister's nephews have to help him in too.
His sister's sons have to help him to put up. If he was Raven, then his sister's children were ravens, and they were his nephew. His brother's children were eagle, because his brother being a raven, and his wife had to be eagle, and all her children were eagle. They were not obligated to help their uncle. Patriarchal nephews were not obligated to help their uncle, their father's brother. Their mother's brothers. That's the reason why didn't the Haidas have great respect for the women?
Yeah,
because they were builders of nations.
Yeah.
On account of their children.
Yeah, we talked to Lydia George in Angoon, and she said, like, the people in this area, the women always had a strong voice in government. Is that, I mean, they were respected, very honored.
Not outwardly. They would have a big fire in a big potlatch house, and the fire was in the middle.
That's right.
They lived on tiers.
You know, and they build just like a platform, they
like
live.
The steps. And it's big, the steps were big enough so that
whole family
would sleep over there. The young boys slept at the end because they're the ones that had to go get up and get the wood and keep the fire going in the wintertime. The big chief, Honor, was at the back end, and his family stayed there. And so when they were making laws or talking about philosophy, right? It was only the men that spoke.
That's right.
But women kept quiet. They listened. They served the meals. They served them. And then the last thing they served was soap berries. That was an honor. They give each one the soap berries. First to the highest one, the next to the next highest one, and so forth. And then when the meeting was over, and the husbands went home, and if they didn't agree with a certain rule, the husband heard about it. And that's where the wives did the lobbying. And the next meeting they had, they would change the tune a little bit to satisfy the wife. It was not the woman's place to talk, stand up and talk like they do today. They kept quiet, but they talked, and they had great power. It was the men that would run the government. It was the women that gave birth to a nation. It was the women that was one of the strongest lobbyists, but they never heard her talk. But she talked to her husband.
Yeah.
That's
right.
No, Nick, you were wrong that time. Back and change it. And that you better go back and change it. And he would change it a little bit. He was very, very, very diplomatic methods of doing it, so not to insult a fellow who originated that idea. They have to be very careful how they spoke it. Not to insult a person, the man, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Change from that thing. They didn't always whip them. The only person that had the power to whip the boys was the, if he wanted to, they didn't loosen him, was the uncle, wasn't it?
The uncle. Yeah,
they
train the nephews, the uncles, you know. I was raised by a missionary at Haukan. So I trying to live a good life.
You stayed with Mrs. McLeod.
Yeah.
What was
she was a missionary. Old Man Gould was there, his
Old
brother.
Old Man Gould, he was a missionary.
He was a preacher, yeah.
He was a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And was it not the Old Man Gould The one that married my grandfather, he was a German.
I think
and
so.
And my grandmother.
Yeah, he married a lot of people down there, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
And that caused a little trouble with my grandfather and my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
That's
there,
another story.
Were there, in those days, were there shamans, and did the missionary and the native idea of religion ever clash?
Oh, yes. They,
and what happened when the...
It takes a little while the natives understand the missionary, you know, which is right and which is wrong, see. Take a little while to make them understand. But after they understand the missionary, then they go with him, you know. You ought to see the old people. They used to go to church, dress up nice. The old lady had big hats on years ago, big fancy hats they used to buy and dress up nice, and they go. All the church used to be full of people, you know. He used to tell you. That's the way it happened in, I see it in Tlaloc too.
In rare cases though.
A lot of people.
The mission, excuse me.
A lot of people go to church. Now nobody goes to church.
In the olden days though, some of the missionaries were running the Indian doctors down and saying they're doing wrong. They're doing wrong.
Yeah.
People must have been confused.
They were confused, but yet they didn't let the old ideas go.
It stayed in the dancing and the art.
It stayed in the dancing and the art of today. And then we found out that they were great philosophers, great thinkers. Where there were a man like him lost his beautiful wife when the kids were all just babies, and a man came along. He didn't say he was an Indian doctor, but he says, good one, have strength, have faith. Luck will come to you if you stand up like a man. Be brave. You're a man. You have many children. Stand up and lead them. So you stood up. You led them. And you have a fine family today. How many kids and grandchildren are in colleges today?
My daughter next door, I think she counted 123, I think she said, grandchildren, great-grandchildren all together.
How old was your wife when she died?
She's 30 years old, I think. She was young when I married her.
I was 9 years old.
How many years did you go without a wife then before you married again?
Oh, 3 years. I didn't get married. She's a wonderful woman, so I didn't want to get married for a long time.
How did you work and take care of your children?
I send them to school, the small ones, you know. My mother used to take care of the baby, you know, how Heidelberg. Mother used to take care of the baby. She was still alive then, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's come to the end there, I guess.
Now they used to get us together in a ring. The old people got to be quiet, and when the uncle started to tell you which is right and which is wrong, you know, you have to listen. If you get out from that ring, he says, that person is not going to last too, he's not going to live too long, because he break the ring, see, break the chain like that. And I see it happen. All my brothers died off young because they never listened. I'd be the last one. I stay there till they get through. Respect. They don't like to see this young person go while the old people instruct you what to do in life, what life is. And happy life, a Christian life all my lifetime. I joined the church when I was 7 years old. And I still go to church, even I can hardly walk. I took a walk up there today from clear up here. Go to church every Sunday. That's where I was trained. Things were hard years ago, you know. Years ago, not many got a job. Only one cannery is in Tlaloc. My daddy used to salt fish in Tlaloc. My daddy salted 830 barrels a season before I was born. And he used to ship them to San Francisco. And through him, people from San Francisco start the cannery through my daddy. That's something, huh? I used to hear about it, but there's a book on it now. You were your first salmon cannery, Alaska, that was 1876. I just started in 4 years ago. But my uncles were the one of the best carvers ever known among Haidas. They're the best. That's what I heard about. I read about them, you know, in the magazine, you know, one time, and they claimed they were the best carvers. They make good canoes, nice canoes, big canoes, war canoes. My uncle, I used to watch my uncle make those big canoes. Then he tow it up to Wrangell, sell it, cake, he sell it. Sometimes Sitka, clear up to Sitka, he used to tow a canoe up when they finish one. One log. And they steam it too, you know, they spread it. They use cedar log, you know. They find a nice cedar log and without knots, you know. Painted, some of them, war canoes, they painted, you know.
Some they didn't.
Before my time, they painted, but I seen one painted in Wrangell. There's a 1940, they had big potlatch in Wrangell, and there's one big war canoe came from Cake, all painted up, you know, the bow and the stern, and they're just full of people landing in Wrangell, you know, to see the big potlatch, that chief shakes. They landed there in that big canoe, I've seen that. That's the last one I saw.
What is the history of the totem poles?
There's all kinds of, bear, beaver, man, and whale killer, and the whale, all kind of designs they put on.
Wolf
or raven, eagle.
Clowns.
Someone told me sculpin. That each pole tells a story, like it's a history. Yeah. If you knew the symbol, you could read the pole.
That's what they did long time ago, yeah.
George, to me, each pole was like a title of a book.
Yeah, that's just something.
You have to know, you have to read the book before you know what the title meant.
The old people have to tell you the story about what, you know, what it means, all this carving, you know.
George, it wasn't just for one thing they carved the totem pole, wasn't it? Just for one thing. One is to honor the family or the chief.
The one that gives the big potlatch, he got to make a totem pole to get honor.
Get honor.
When he gets through, he gives everything away what he's got, except his wife and his canoe and his...